Good morning, everyone. Happy Monday, and welcome to the 7 a.m. Eastern Time Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Amy G., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Maryland. Today's date is Monday. It is December 2nd, 2024. Today we are reading from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We are in the chapter How It Works on page 62, the first paragraph starting with selfish self-centeredness, going through the bottom of the paragraph, which later placed us in a position to be hurt, unpacking that one paragraph only. Today's readers are, and thank you to Team Monday, Elizabeth D., Chanel P., Tamara C., Susan G., newcomer reader, Suzanne W., host for the second awesome unrecorded hour, Anne A. The reference numbers for yesterday, Sunday, December 1st, special edition is 21,958. That's 21958. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover. Through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I am now going to ask for Tamara C. to read the 12 steps. Please go ahead, Tamara.
All right, this is Tamara C., grateful to be a recovered compulsive overeater in Missouri. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you so much, Tamara C. Thanks for being our backup. I will now ask for Susan G. to read the 12 traditions. Please go ahead, Susan.
Thank you, Amy. This is Susan G. in Tennessee, recovered compulsive overeater. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous are Tradition one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Six, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you again for letting me give service in that path.
Thank you so much, Susan G. Okie dokie, how our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. If you go over, you'll hear me say time. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only, please. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for moderators. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. Again, this meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute your phone. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone again. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speakers should be muted. Today, we resume our study in the Big Book. We are in the chapter How It Works. We are on page 62, the first paragraph, and I'm going to ask Elizabeth B. to get us started. Please go ahead, Elizabeth.
Hi, Amy. Can I be heard?
Absolutely. Can't wait.
Thanks. My name is Elizabeth D. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater living in the Boston area. Selfishness, self-centeredness. That, we believe, is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that at some point in the past, we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. I'm so grateful to have an opportunity to read this today and grateful for Amy's service and everyone else who just on this meeting. So where are we in the steps? Where am I in the steps? Well, I have taken step one. I am absolutely convinced that I am a compulsive overeater. And not only that, and most importantly, I can't manage my own life. Not alone. I have come to believe that a power greater than myself can restore me to sanity around food and my food behaviors. Now I'm at step three, where I'm asked to make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I personally understand God. So this, for me, is a decision. And for me, it's also very much a reflection step. I'm here to reflect on my behavior and my thoughts and my attitudes in this step before I move on to the rest of the steps. And I so relate to what I am reading here. First thing that steps out, the word root. What does the word root mean? Well, the root of a tree holds it up. The roots are in deep in the ground, embedded in the soil. It takes nutrients and water from the soil and brings it up into the tree so that the tree can grow and bear fruit. This is very seriously when it says the root of our troubles are 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. Wow. There is a very serious message that's embedded in this metaphor for me. I've been driven by all these things. And what is the fruit of this root of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity? Well, it's been a lot of things that have tripped me up in life, but particularly logs and lost relationships. And all the consequent pain, confusion, and ultimately eating that my decisions have brought about. You know, my relationships with men, due to fear of loneliness, of the pain of being alone, I wasn't listening to what the man was saying to me, the clue that the man was unwilling to be in a committed relationship. I wasn't hearing him, even though the clues were very clear. So that self-delusion and that fear were operative. I kept the relationship going way too long. I deluded myself into thinking that I am going to be the one that changes him and turns him into the perfect man for me. So there's that, what we've been reading in the past about being the director and creating a script for the men in my life. In my career, the fear of uncertainty, economic insecurity have kept me in jobs much longer than I should have been in those jobs, certain jobs. They weren't a good fit. Yeah. But I am so grateful today that despite all of this, I have learned through the steps how to set aside those things to step four and step five and to be the kind of person that God wants me to be, and the freedom and the peace have brought me to a life second to none, and I am so very grateful. Thanks for your service, Amy, and I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Elizabeth D., for getting us started. Great job. Okay. So although we value your experience, strength, and health, everyone's experienced strength and hope, if you shared in the last couple of days in any of the Vision for You meetings, either Friday or Thursday, we gratefully ask that you please step aside and allow others to share their experience, strength, and hope as well. So who would like to share on what was read?
Lisa B. in South Carolina.
Tanya
B.
in Florida.
Joanne B. Vermont. Joanne B. Vermont.
Kelly G.
Kelly G.
Tamara C.
Nadia E. Toronto.
Who in Toronto?
Larry K.
It's Nadia.
Is there somebody from Toronto? Nadia?
Nadia.
Oh, Nadia in Toronto?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, great. Nadia B. Gotcha. All right. Here's what I have. I've got Lisa B., Tanya B., Joanne B., lots of B's, Kelly G., Tamara C., Nadia B., and Larry K. Great group to get us started. All right, Lisa B., please go ahead. You are up.
Oh, good morning, Amy. Can you hear me okay?
Very well. Thank you.
Please
go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Lisa B., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater, and I'm calling from the state of South Carolina. You know, this morning when the reader was reading the 12 steps, step two jumped out to me so much, and I'm so grateful for step two, because I have so much hope today. God is restoring me to sanity. And I read in this amazing paragraph that Elizabeth did such a beautiful share on, you know, this is like the root of all my insanity and the root of my problem. This is it, everything, you know. And being driven by 100 forms of fear, like when I do my inventory, you know, I might list some fears, but the big book is telling me that I actually have 100 forms. I don't think I've ever listed 100, you know. And that's the thing with time. The longer I'm abstinent, I uncover them more and more. And, you know, there's different sayings that I've heard, like in AA, they say it takes 5 years to get your head out of hock, you know, and it's probably that way too for compulsive overeaters. But the longer I'm abstinent, I realize, well, first of all, how little I know and how frightening this disease really is, because I continue to come face to face with it. And that's why I have to continue in this work. And just like she did such a beautiful job highlighting that word root, you know what word really jumped out for me? Position. It places me in a position to be hurt. And I picture like being in the corner, cowering. And who's hurting me is me. Like I'm beating myself, you know, with my behaviors. And then, but soon to come on the top of page 63, it talks about being in such a position. When we're sincerely in such a position, what happens? But remarkable things happen. Well, right now we're talking about the yucky things, you know, but this is what I have to get to. And that's why the food has to be down, the beverages, the behaviors, the ingredients, and all of that, so I can really have clarity of mind. You know, my mind is sharp and sometimes it's too sharp and I'm too smart for my own good, but I get beaten into a place of being willing to do this work repeatedly over and over again. And like 24 pages or so from now, we're going to read about in step 10, how we ask, you know, for being divorced from these motives of self-pity, dishonesty, and self-seeking motives. And these are the things that cause the problem. These are the roots. And I'm so excited today because I continue to uncover this stuff and it is freeing and freeing and freeing. And I'm so grateful for this way of life. So thank you so much for your service and everyone. I pass.
Love the excitement. Let's keep it rolling. Thank you, Lisa B. from South Carolina. Tanya B., you're up, followed by Joanne B. Please go ahead, Tanya.
Hi, this is Tanya D. as in dog. Thank you for moderating. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Illinois. This is such an important paragraph and such an important idea. When I came into this program, I thought that, you know, the problem was other people and the problem was that I wasn't good enough. And the good news is that this paragraph doesn't say that my problem is that, you know, I'm not good enough in some way. The problem is my self-centeredness and the 100 forms of fear, delusion, self-pity. Learning in this program the difference between selfishness and self-centeredness was revolutionary for me because I didn't feel like a selfish person. And then I discovered that if I make everything about myself, whether it's by, you know, taking more than my share or just by thinking that it's all about me, I'm self-centered. And I did think that everything was about me, that if you acted a certain way, it was about me. And then, you know, it also took me a while to understand the second part of this paragraph, that it's like we invariably placed ourselves, we made decisions based on self that placed us in a position to be hurt. You know, what it doesn't say is that we did something that caused the other person to act the way we did. You know, that's how I initially read this when looking for my part, it's like, well, how did I cause this to happen? And, you know, the reality is I'm not a higher power. If I think that I can secretly control other people, you know, if I do X, they will do Y. And so they did Y because I did X. I'm making myself a higher power because then the implication is if I don't do it, they won't react that way, which in some cases is true. But for me, what this really says, you know, what these decisions based on self are often is that I give the person the power to make me resentful and to make me hurt. You know, if I have an attitude of I can't be okay unless I'm treated a certain way or unless this person, you know, gives me what I want, then yes, if that person acts a different way than I want them to, I will be hurt. And so for me, it's about the expectations I set. And for me, a lot of it was wanting to be special and wanting people to treat me as if I was special. And when they didn't, I got hurt. And realizing that, you know, I thought, oh man, this is going to be such a bummer, you know, making it all kind of on me. But it really is a relief because I can't control other people. And so when I realized that this is the root of my problem, it's the self-centeredness, I can be so much freer than, you know, the way I approached it, which is that everybody else needs to change because I don't know how to change anybody else. You know, I barely know how to change myself. Like, it's definitely a gift from a higher power when these things get relieved.
Fine,
but it is, thank you. It is the way forward. Thank you for letting me share, and I pass.
Thank you so much, Tanya D. from Illinois. Now, Joanne B., you're up, followed by Kelly G. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everybody. This is Joanne B., a compulsive overeater from Vermont. I love this passage, and I really felt compelled to share because one of the biggest lessons I've learned since being in OA and following the 12 steps really resonated with this paragraph. I had a situation like maybe 3 years ago, this is before I came into the room, where I was hurt very badly by a friend, someone who's a close friend of mine. I felt judged by her. I felt that she judged me. She was in the wrong. And I asked, you know, I turned to other people to back up this feeling of mine that this person's out of line, she's in the wrong, she's judging me, et cetera, et cetera. And then once I got into OA and I started, you know, I'm practicing the steps and doing a step four, I had to put this person on my resentment list. I couldn't figure out what my part in it was. But then I did figure it out that I had placed myself in a position to be hurt. I had placed other people in positions where I could be hurt by them instead of, you know, placing God in the center of my life. For me, it was other people. And I had to dig deep and realize that it was my fault that I had placed, it was my actions that had placed me in this position to be hurt. And it was such a revelation to me. Today, I look to my higher power for guidance. I do talk to friends, et cetera. I know that if I stay God-centered, that I won't need to put people on pedestals, and I won't, you know, it doesn't mean I'm not going to get hurt by other people. I will. But I know that as long as I'm right with God and, like, my higher power, that's good enough, you know, for me. Anyway, thanks for the reading, and thanks for letting me share. Have a good day.
Thank you so much, Joanne B. from Vermont. Kelly G., you're up, followed by Tamara C. Please go ahead, Kelly.
Good morning, Kelly G., recovered compulsive overeater in Florida. You know, this paragraph was so eye-opening to me when I thought I was the most giving, generous person, and my sponsor said to me in the most lovingly way, "You are the most self-centered person I know." And I was like, well, thank you. You know, like, what a compliment. But when I was reading this and going through the book, 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, and self-seeking. The self-delusion is me. The self-delusion is the stories that I tell myself. And so often, It's the stories that keep me so sick than staying in the reality. And I'm one of those people where if I'm in a disagreement with someone, I want to talk about it and I want to keep pushing harder and harder and harder. When somebody gives me distance, I want to chase them. I want to hash it out. And the world is not like that. And the thing is that I expect people to constantly make me feel better. I want to be soothed. I want things to resolve. And the thing is that the hardest part that I've learned in recovery is that I need to learn, with God's help, obviously, how to resolve things within myself and with God, that I can't depend on other people to make me feel better, to resolve things. And for example, over the holidays, Thanksgiving, I was with my family, and I have so much to be grateful for. I really do have such a beautiful life. And I remember getting a pedicure, and I was in the worst mood. And it was like, Kelly, are you serious? You're in the worst mood? Like, you're pampering yourself. You're with your family. You're on vacation in Florida. Like, are you serious? And I couldn't think my way out of it. I literally couldn't think my way out of it. So what did I do? I looked for places where I could do service. I made a bunch of calls to fellows. I was kind to the people around me. And that's the only thing that can help me snap out of it, because my default is selfish, self-centered. What can you do for me? How can you make sure, or how can I make sure that my needs are being met? And it's everyone else's commitment to make sure my needs are met. And only with the surplus of energy I have to think about will I then show generosity towards others. And that was a twisting of the mind. And sometimes when I slip back into that thought process, I am miserable. I am so miserable when I'm constantly thinking of myself. So I'm really grateful to read this paragraph. Great reminder. I don't want to chase my own tail today. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Kelly G. from Florida. Tamara C., you are up, followed by Nadia B. And just a quick reminder to folks, in case you got in just a little later, page 62, first paragraph is where we're at here. All right, Tamara, please go ahead.
Thanks, Amy. Thank you for your service. I'm Tamara C. I'm a compulsive overeater, recovered in Missouri. I need to be reminded every day. Every day, my first requirement is that I be convinced that my life is run on self-will and that will not be a success that way. But I just need to see, like, okay, what drives me? Why are they spending so many paragraphs talking about selfishness, self-centeredness? My focus on self is what drives me. Am I okay? Am I safe? Am I happy? Am I good? Am I loved enough? Am I respected? Am I powerful? Am I comfortable? Am I satisfied? Am I smart enough? And really the big one for me is that, am I safe? Am I safe? Am I okay? And my self-centeredness is that I must arrange all of this. I have to really be driven by making sure all of this happens, and my self-delusion is that I can control any of it. The truth is, I'm powerless over all of this, and I'm powerless over my selfishness. And my self-pity is, you know, when I work so hard to control it, why isn't it going my way? It's not fair. And it's the root of my troubles. I lived a life where, as though this were my solution. All of this selfishness was my solution. Like, I wanted to be that kind, generous, giving, self-sacrificing person, but I had to make myself be that by figuring all this out. And all of this driving me is not the solution. It's the root of my troubles. What? And it's because this burden is not mine to carry. I was never meant to play the director. That's not the role of my life. And that's the good news. Now that I'm at step three, I in this place in the book, I get to lean into my powerlessness, including my powerlessness over all this self-centeredness. And I get to lean into my willingness to believe in a power and into the spiritual action in the steps that show me how to hire a new director, a loving and powerful one. And so today, may we all find that power in the steps. Thanks for letting me share a path.
Thank you so much, Tamara C. from Missouri. All right, Nadia B., followed by Larry K., and then we'll take some more names. Go ahead, Nadia.
Good morning, family. It's Nadia E. as an echo in Toronto, Canada. And I am so grateful for Vision. And thank you all for your service. And I had to call in this morning because it just, my behavior last night, it was just like being struck over the head. And the gift of my recovery is awareness. Because in the past, I don't think I would have been aware. And what happened was I called a fellow and was trying to arrange a different time for our conversation. And but I was like rushing the conversation because I just wanted to get out what I had to say and get things established and get back to the other person. And what I do sometimes on the phone with people is I rush because I think, oh, I'm not good enough, or I'm not important enough. So I better not waste their time because I'm not significant enough. So all these stories, like all these lies that I tell myself, and it screws up. I don't know if it screws up, but it messes up relationships. And what's coming to me is that I need, in these 24 hours, I need to become willing to let go and to let God change me into the person that I am meant to be. And that is freedom. I don't have to control. I don't have to set the stage. I don't have to do all that stuff. All I'm asked in step six is to be entirely ready to just open my arms and say, here I am, this is me, good and the bad, take me as I am and do with me as you will. I just feel so emotional and so grateful, and that's going to be my day today. And I'm going to be completely honest with my fellow and tell her what I did and that I'm sorry and that I don't want to behave like that. So thanks for being there. Love you all. Have a great day and I pass.
Thank you, Nadia E. from Toronto. Larry K., you're up, and then we'll take some more names. Go ahead, Larry.
Good morning, Amy. Thanks for your service. I'm Larry K., a recovered compulsive overeater from Chicago, and our text reads, as we've seen, selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our trouble. So it's that inward unmanageability, and it's characterized by a disconnection with the sunlight of the spirit, with a connection with the higher power. And I think a more spot-on term for me, because it could be misconstrued selfishness, self-centeredness. I think a more spot-on terms would be like self-absorbed. Just I'm so preoccupied with me. So it's not just the selfishness of the brand, the arrogant person who could care less about the world and the problems and other people and, you know, that type of narcissistic kind of selfishness. It could be that. But it could also be the person who has tremendous self-loathing. You know, that all you can think about is perhaps other people that have done things to you, the victimization of those things. And you may be justified in those feelings, but here's the problem. We're still preoccupied with ourselves, even in that state. And so in that sense, selfish. We're preoccupied. We're absorbed in me. Even when I'm thinking of you, I'm thinking of you in relation to me, and I can't stop doing that. So what I can infer from the text is that spiritual truths are difficult to discern if I'm excessively focused on me to the exclusion of others. And what the steps are designed to do is produce a psychic change, right? We know that, a spiritual awakening, a spiritual experience that brings me into congruence with a power. And how's that going to come about? Well, it's going to provide us with a set of actions that are embedded in the 12 steps that reduce my preoccupation with me. You know, it's like dying to self brings me into conscious contact with God or with the higher power. And by the way, I don't want to misconstrue the notion of ego reduction as somehow abandoning my needs as a human being. Don't worry. God will meet your needs just fine when you're living in alignment with God. A squirrel is just fine. They find their nuts, they find their berries, they find their nesting, they find all those things. And they go about and they play and they experience their environment, you know. So in a natural state, an animal doesn't have to worry about their needs being met. So I don't want to misconstrue, but I need to be in a state of cooperation rather than defiance. And actually our basic needs don't get met when I'm constantly preoccupied with self. And so I'll wrap up by saying this, you know, the type of self-centeredness, until I'm brought into alignment with power, I'm going to remain tethered to the root of my troubles. And the food will serve as an opiate to that state of being. And despite my best intentions, I will continue to step on the toes of others. And yes, they will retaliate. Some will and some won't, but they'll retaliate. But regardless, I'll be both the purveyor and the receptacle of misery in that state. I need to find a relationship with power. That comes by the implementation of the steps. With that, I pass. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Larry K. Okay, so we're going to continue on. We're on page 62, the first paragraph, selfishness, self-centeredness. Who else would like to
Anayeta, share? Anayeta R. Anayeta.
Ilana P.
Thanks.
Margaret D., Georgia.
Robin L.
Margaret.
Ilana P.
Ilana P. I've got Hanayeta, Margaret D., Ilana P. Who done this? I knew there were some other people there on this. Okay, anyone else? Hanayeta, Margaret D., Ilana P., who else? Okay, let's go. Hanayeta R., you're up, followed by Margaret D. Please go ahead.
Okay, thank you so much, Amy, for your service. I love when you share, you lead. I'm Hanayeta R. from Plano, Texas, and I am a recovered compulsive eater. I'm in remission today. So, selfish and self-centeredness? Not me. Right. I just love that. That we think our roots, somebody already described root and driven because I really didn't grasp all that. And so I thank them. But what I didn't really realize what self-delusion was. So actually, well, I actually just looked it up, and it says self-delusion is the act of believing something that is not true, or the state of being deluded by oneself. And there's a wonderful picture of a little kitty looking in a mirror, and they see a lion. That is so perfect. Like, yes, self-delusion. I see things that aren't true. So I have to be really careful. You know, that's why I ask for guidance every day in my 11th step, you know, and check it out at night. I check it out, make sure. But so I'm so grateful for that. But here it says, though,
not seemingly without provocation. Sometimes they hurt us, but it's because maybe we've done something to them. Just yesterday, I made a comment to somebody, just a comment. I didn't think anything of it, but it hurt her terrible. Thank God she had enough self-worth that she could say, why did you say that? That really hurt my feelings. And I would have had not a clue. I would not have known I had done that. I had a friend of 20 years that all of a sudden said, I only want to email you. I don't want to talk to you on the phone. So I finally, after several emails, got her to tell me why she didn't want to talk to me. And she told me that I'm not with her when I talk to her. I'm cooking or I'm watching TV or I'm talking to my husband or I'm whatever. I do 20 other things because I don't want to talk to somebody like that. I want to, if when I talk to somebody, I want them to be my focus, and I would want that in return because you're special to me. I want to be special to you. I would have never known that if she hadn't told me. And my sister told me yesterday, she says, she was right. You do that all the time. It's terrible. So I have to be more careful of that. But I'm so glad I have people in my life that will tell me that I have, you know, self-delusion. I think I'm great, but I'm not always so great. Anyway, this is a miracle to me. It's all miracles to me. I love it. Don't quit 5 minutes before the miracle. And you never know when that's happened. And we all have a miracle out there waiting for us. Thank you again, Amy, for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you, Henrietta R. from Texas. Alrighty, Margaret D. followed by Alana P. And then we'll have time to take some more names. Go ahead, Margaret.
Thanks, Amy. Hey, everybody. Good morning. Margaret D. in Georgia. And also welcome to the newcomers and also, and very much so the people that are still suffering from this disease, whether they're brand new or they've been here 40 years. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. Many years ago, probably 15 or 20 years ago, I had an 11th step buddy, and we would do the 11th step on a pretty consistent basis. And we had gotten to this point in the big book, and I was determined, absolutely determined, because I could not believe this was true of me, that I was basically self-centered, dishonest, resentful, and afraid, and that I was the one that was creating all these, bounced off onto other people, and then they bounced those same issues back onto me. And so at any rate, I would check in at the end of the day, the different things that I had done to illustrate that I was not self-centered, and I wasn't selfish, and I wasn't the root of these problems where people would come back and want to punch me in the nose or whatever it was, or at least that there would be recriminations or consequences that followed. And so my 11th step buddy, he would just start to laugh at times, and he would say, I would, say whatever it was that I had done, and he would laugh, and he would say, if you trace that back, Margaret, do you see where you were being selfish? Oh. And then the next day, Margaret, do you see the selfishness that was involved in that? Because the only reason that you want to do this is so that you can say that you're not being selfish, that you can prove that you're not being selfish. That's a very selfish motive. And I realized after about 2 weeks of him saying this to me again, day in and day out, what's your motive here? Well, I just don't want people to think that I'm, well, Margaret, that's your motive. That's a selfish motive. It's based on how you want others to see you. And after doing that, I saw the absolute futility. It was just like somebody threw me into a 55-gallon vat of machine oil or whatever, and I expected to come out of it completely clean and, you know, without any oil on me or dirt or that was not going to be a happening thing. And the remedy that I found, the only remedy that I found, and I'm going to pass in just a second, was concentrating on God and what did God want me to do that day and what did God want me to be that day. Self-centeredness is, well, anyways, okay. I guess that's all I need to, thank you, that's all I need to share, is that I can't be rid of self-centeredness by myself. Self-centeredness can't get rid of self-centeredness. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Margaret D. from Georgia. Alana P., you're up, and then we'll take some more names. Friendly reminder, we're on page 62, first paragraph. Please go ahead, Alana.
Good morning, Ilana P., recovered compulsive overeater from Pittsburgh. So I've heard a speaker say about this word driven. They've described it as, okay, a car drives up in the morning, the door opens, I get in, the driver says, good morning, Ilana, I'm fear, and I'm going to drive your ass today. And then the next day, the car comes up, I get in, good morning, Ilana, I'm anger, and I'm going to drive your ass today. And that's how I lived my life. And it took me a while in this program and in another program to realize that I was selfish. But then what really got me, and why this is one of my favorite paragraphs in this whole book, is the, you know, I step on the toes of my fellows, they retaliate. At some point in the past, I've made decisions based on self, which later placed me in a position to be hurt. It took me a long time, but I finally got that. I had to look back on my behavior. And first, of course, I was trying to escape through the food. And when that didn't work, I tried to escape through geographics. I moved so many times in so many different states and in out of the country trying to escape from myself. And each time I did that, as well as other behaviors, I stepped on toes. And I gave up furniture, and then I had to buy it again when I came back, and then I gave it up again, and then I had to buy it again. That's just one example. I was crazy. I acted crazy, and it was all myself and trying to do whatever I could do to get what I want, to feel okay, or to just blot out my whole existence, right? I'm just so happy and grateful that I was able to get to this point where I see that plain as day. And sometimes, of course, I don't even realize it until after I've done it, and I have to go back and make amends, do inventory, whatever is required. But it is me depending on myself to do everything and to think that I deserve to make my own decisions. And I've lost that privilege, right? I have to go to God for every decision that I am in the process of making. Otherwise, I screw it up for myself and for plenty of others. So grateful to be here this morning. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you much. Thank you much. Alana P. from Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. All right. So who else would like to share on what was read? Page 62, first paragraph.
Robin L., Connecticut.
Robin. Anyone else? Got time for probably one more.
Lucy B., Florida.
Lisa, I'm not sure we're going to get you there. All right, let's go ahead. Robin L.
Good morning. This is Robin L. from Connecticut. I am a compulsive overeater. And when I read this paragraph, and when I read this paragraph, it reminds me that I was a victim of self-pity, a victim of poor me's. Look what everybody else did to me. I always had the blame on someone else for whatever was going on in my life. I couldn't see my part in that I had done something to others. It was always what they had done to me. So I certainly was in self-pity. I was being selfish and self-centered, and it took working these steps, and it took a while for me to be able to see what my part was, where I was responsible for my own misery. And it really caused difficulties in relationships, and then I would get out because my feelings were hurt. And so what a big difference in being able to work the steps and trust God to guide my life so that I could see my part and not behave that way anymore, that I could work things out without having to just back away in anger that someone else had wronged me. And perhaps, you know, things in the relationship had gone that said, like, that sometimes in the past a person might have been hurt me without provocation. They weren't even aware of it. And then I would sulk and have silent scorn. And what a way to live. It was miserable. And today I can be free from all that, as long as I work the steps continuously and trust God to guide my life. So with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Robin L. from Connecticut. All right, Leah F., you'll take us out.
Thank you. Thank you so much for hearing me. Okay, selfishness. I'm Leah from Brooklyn, New York, and recovered and grateful. So grateful. So what is selfishness? It means that I want a lot of things and I want them to go my way, and they're not going my way, and I'm gonna do things that they should happen to be my way. And then they give you the answer. It's the reason I'm doing that is driven by 100 forms of all kinds of answers why I'm doing things my way. One is fear. I'm petrified about things going in a different way. And for whatever reason I have that, that's what's doing it to me. Or self-delusion, I'm imagining things. Or self-seeking, which is a definite. And, you know, when I want things to work out the way I want to, I am not accepting what God has given me and looking at the true fact. And fact has based me right back into my being and into my real world. And my real world was that I was stuffing my face and I was doing things that I really hated, and I continued to do them, and then I didn't feel it until I was numb and just passed out. So I was hurting myself because nobody wants to live that way. Oh, I want to be in bed. I want to sleep. I want to sleep it off. This is not a make-believe world. This is the world that I'm living in, and I'm going to make it work with God's help, and only with God's help, because you can't survive in anything that you're going through unless you have that higher power to guide you and this wonderful fellowship. And with that, I pass.
Thank you so much, Maya F. from New York. Looks like we actually have 1 minute left. I forgot that your name just went right out of my head. I'm so sorry, but there was someone who did want to share who I didn't think we had time for. Would you like to take that minute?
Sure, Lucy B. from Florida.
That's it. Go ahead, Lucy.
Thank you so much, and it's short. Thanks, everybody, for their service today. I just want to say this paragraph is the one I missed for 3 decades. in this program. You know, I never understood my own selfishness and self-centeredness until a caring sponsor slowly took me through this part of the big book and explained it to me. I did not understand. I could not see my selfishness and my self-centeredness. And I think as compulsive overeaters, you know, we all want to be safe. We all want to feel secure. We all want to be okay. And it was really hard for me to understand how I wasn't this kind, generous, caring person that I saw myself as. And I'm so grateful that in my fourth, you know, decade in this program, that it was finally pointed out to me and discussed with me in a really specific way where this occurred in my life, my own selfishness and self-centeredness. And I'm so grateful for that. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Lucy B. Great way to take us out. Lucy B. from Florida. And I'd like to thank everyone. Thank you, everyone, all who read, all who gave service. Thank you to Team Monday. Please join us for another second awesome unrecorded hour of study immediately following this closing. The share ID for today, Monday, December 2nd, 2024, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 21,959. That's 21959. We will now close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Chanel T. please take us out?
Yes, thank you, Amy. This is Chanel T., grateful and recovered in Washington State. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until